Hello and welcome to the XCast. The truth is in here. My name is Clara Cook and I'm your host for today. Joining me today is Matt Latham. Matt, how are you doing today?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Matt, I don't think we've ever actually podcasted together before.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
So none of this will seem strange to you, that the fact that we're talking about, I don't know, bugs, manure, Mulder and Scully, while being recorded at the same time.
It's probably one of the more normal conversations I'll have this week, to be honest.
So today we're here to discuss the episode War of the Coprahages. It could be Coprahages, Coprahages, Coprahages. I don't think anyone really knows how to say this, except maybe entomologist, but I don't know how to say it. Matt, do you have a idea of how to pronounce it?
I'm not going to attempt to. I might just substitute the name throughout. So.
I mean, I didn't really realise this until I started researching this episode. I must have watched it like a million times, but I didn't actually ever occur to me that the title actually means War of the Shit Eaters, because it's, I think it's in reference to Coprahagia, which means the consumption of feces, consumption of shit, basically, which is what cockroaches eat a lot of the time, is crap. So I think it does mean War of the Shit Eaters. We could just refer to it as that, really, to be honest.
And it's a bit of a shame, because I quite like this episode. Do we have shit-eating grins on our faces, if you like?
Definitely. So the episode, War of the Coprahages, is episode 12 of season 3. It was aired on the 5th of January 1996, and it's written by Darren Morgan and directed by Kim Manners. The IMDb rating for this episode is 8.9 out of 10, which I think is a little low, actually. I think it's a much more of a closer to a 10 out of 10 episode. Matt, do you think this rating is fair, or would you rate it higher?
Not in the slightest. This is probably in my top 5, possibly top 3 episodes of the show, so... So, yeah, whoever's on IMDb doesn't know what they're talking about, if I'm honest. So,
so what rating would you give this? Like, just to start?
I'll give this a 10.
You give us a 10 out of 10? Oh,
yeah, it's probably my top 3.
Yeah, that's high praise. Yeah. I think I'd probably give it close to a 10 out of 10. I mean, there's nothing I don't like about it, so it's a winner, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's... I'll go into more depth later on, but I just think it's... Not only is it really funny, it's quite intelligent in what it has to say, perhaps about fiction, and specifically how The X-Files handles its own fiction and its own tropes, to be honest. And it's... Particularly at this point, this is like probably during its massive peak, its creative peak at the moment, and it does a lot of self-analysing its... both positive and negative features. And I mean, having it under 9 out of 10 on IMDb, I think that's a real disservice to just how great the episode is.
Yeah, well, I guess IMDb ratings take into account a huge number of people, and not everybody maybe sort of can understand the complexities of Darren Morgan's writing.
No, I think it's probably just all the Jose Chung fans, like, it's like declaring war on the episode.
So a basic summary of the episode is... While searching for UFOs in the night sky in a small town, Mulder gets roped into investigating a series of deaths, supposedly caused by killer cockroaches. He is assisted by Scully over the phone. So, you've said this is a 10 out of 10 episode for you. When did you first see this episode?
It may have been years and years before, but I think, as I said, I think long-term long-term listeners to the podcast might know from when I was... on ice/space, that I was kind of in the middle or just starting watching it sequentially for the first time ever, like about a year and a half to pushing 2 years ago. And after like watching bits and pieces all over the place for years, I'm not 100% sure which episodes I watched and not watched. And for years, I thought I'd never seen Jose Chung until it turns out that I had, and I got it mistaken for Bad Blood. I think this, I might have actually, the first time I watched this was perhaps about a year and a half ago.
Oh, so quite recently then, actually.
Because there's a good chunk of the X-Files episodes that I had never seen before. And I think I've probably only seen half in a weird order. So I think I can honestly, I don't remember much of watching the episodes when I was younger. So I'm pretty confident that it was only about a year and a half ago.
Yeah, see, I think I watched this episode first when I was a very young teenager. So I enjoy it a lot more now that I get a lot more of the humour. And I think that I appreciate it more as an adult than I did as a teenager. So, I mean, I enjoyed it as a teenager. I think I liked it a lot for the fact that Mulder and Scully talked over the phone for most of the episode. I thought that was kind of what appealed to me when I was a teenager. But I think now I get it a lot more. I understand a lot more of the humour, a lot more of the sort of things that Darren Morgan's trying to say. So The X-Files does change in your view as you grow older and as you watch it in different ways, you know?
I think a lot of it, I mean, because I'm probably seeing a lot of the episodes for the first time now, rather than with perhaps the hindsight of how TV and storytelling has evolved. And I wasn't fast binging the series. I was kind of slow binging of like an episode or two a week or fortnight. So a lot of it was still very condensed, and like particularly a lot of the earlier formulaic episodes of or standalones, there was a lot still quite fresh in my mind when I got to this one. So I think a lot of the aspects on how it explores itself is a lot more fresh in my mind when I saw it then.
So yeah, let's take a look at the episode a little bit more in a bit more depth. So first of all, of course, there's the teaser, which starts the episode in a really brilliant way, in my opinion. The teaser starts out with a speech given by a bug exterminator. So he's a pest control employee, and he gives like a sort of elegy to cockroaches, this sort of poetic speech about how advanced they are in terms of evolution. And it's almost kind of admiring, but he ends the speech quite promptly by crushing a cockroach beneath his foot. So he's kind of admiring, but also disgusted by them. And he squishes one under his shoe, and then he starts spreading poison around to kill the cockroaches. And this is in the house of one of the scientists, because it's a scientific community, in Massachusetts. And he's spreading the poison around, and then he promptly starts struggling to breathe. The owner of the house comes downstairs into the basement, which is where the pest controller is, and finds the pest controller dead. So it looks like he's maybe not been attacked by cockroaches, but there's definitely, the cockroaches have definitely somehow contributed to his death.
The way it's structured is very well done as well, because as you said, it's an exterminator who's given a eulogy to this cockroach, but you don't actually see the fact he's an exterminator until like the owner of the house comes down and either interrupts his speech and then turns around and you see exterminator on his back, and it's done for comedic effect. But until then, you think it's some kind of like your usual serious shady man in a suit talking about something that the X-Files usually does. So you think it's some sort of grand philosophizing villain who's doing a monologue about, oh, we're all small insects, blah blah blah, and then it turns out, then the show kind of turns itself on its head and say, hey mate, I just kill these. So it sets up the tone of the episode more than anything, and it just gives you a highlight, and you kind of both know what to expect and not to expect. And I think it's just very cleverly done in how it subverts itself.
The first scene after the teaser, so after the credits, is of Mulder sitting in his car at night. There's a bug that lands on his windscreen. He sort of slaps it off with the windscreen wipers, which is another nice nod to human beings casually dismissing bugs, which are obviously going to come back and wreak their revenge. So he's looking at the night sky, and he's looking for UFOs. Or he's sitting there thinking, because he's heard of UFOs being reported in the area. So his cell phone rings, and it is Scully. He's in Massachusetts in the car, sitting there in the dark. And she's back in Washington, D.C. in her apartment. And she's cleaning her gun, and she's basically been trying to get hold of him all day. And I wanted to ask you what you thought about how Mulder and Scully communicate in this episode, because they communicate mostly by mobile phone. And also, it's a Saturday night, and both of them literally have nothing to do. I mean, Mulder's sitting in a car in the dark by himself, and Scully's cleaning her gun and calling Mulder. And they're not at work. Neither of them are really on a case. So I thought that was a kind of amusing in itself, that they're both... It's kind of sad. They don't really have lives.
Again, this is something I think demonstrates, I think, Darren Morgan kind of wanting to do something different with the format of a usual X-Files episode, highlighting perhaps his own strengths or what he feels he's confident in doing, and also commenting on the X-Files itself. So, for example, like, it's Saturday night, and they're both, well, Scully's sitting there cleaning a handgun, which I think is quite funny throughout the episode, of just exactly what she's doing. what she's doing throughout these cutaway backs, actually. So she's doing like some really weird and mundane things as well as some interesting stuff, whereas Mulder is just, I don't know, investigating weird stuff recreationally. It's like a cop who solves crimes in his spare time. But then I think it also amplifies Darren Morgan's, one of his key strengths within the X-Files, is he's got a very unique voice when it comes to dialogue, and in terms of dialogue, he's probably got the best grasp of being able to write interesting dialogue than any other writer in the series. I think that's the closest you'll get is Vince Gilligan, but I think Vince Gilligan, as great as he is and as great as he will be, has never managed to match how Darren Morgan can write. I mean, I think it's a shame he hasn't written a lot more throughout, because I do think Darren Morgan has a very unique voice in terms of character dialogue. When you compare him to other TV writers like Joss Whedon, Aaron Sorkin, Amy Sherman-Palladino, who wrote the Gilmore Girls, you can kind of tell who's writing an episode based off the dialogue or something. And Darren Morgan has that. And I think using the phone calls and keeping them separate and their only communication is through voice is him either making sure he's writing dialogue-led scenes, because that's, I convince he knows that's his strength, whilst also mixing up the formula so it's not the two of them walking around just bouncing off ideas off each other. They're actually having to communicate in a way that's slightly informally, so it shows a bit more of the character.
I think that Darren Morgan has this ability to not only mix the fantastical and ridiculous with like normal reality and mundanity. And I think one of the things that he does really well is he interjects into the script some of the thoughts of what the audience is thinking. So there's one point when Scully picks up the phone and she's talking to Mulder, and Mulder says something and she goes, "Are you thinking..." she says something like, "Am I thinking that you said what you... I thought you said, because I can't believe you said what I thought you said," or whatever. And that's kind of the reaction I think the audience has sometimes when Mulder comes up with a theory. It's like, did you just say that? Like, do you really believe that? And also in the next bit that we're about to talk about, he's searching for UFOs, or he's sitting there looking at the night sky, and he's just thinking, he's very poetic about how he thinks there's life in outer space, and maybe, do you ever get that feeling when you look up at the night sky and you have this feeling that like something's looking back at you? And Scully completely sort of trashes that completely with a very rational explanation as to why she doesn't think there's intelligent life in outer space, which is very, very much like the banter between the two of them. It's very much like Mulder being poetic about the paranormal and Scully completely shutting him down with her scientific rationality. But there is this funny moment when the car pulls up and the sheriff steps out and he suspects Mulder of waiting there for a drug dealer. And I just thought that's actually quite realistic that a police officer would pull up to investigate why a man is sitting in his car in the dark alone on a Saturday night, like looking at the sky. So there's stuff like that that seems like completely normal, and then it's coupled with really wild, insane stuff like cockroaches killing people. So it's that balance that he does really well, you know? It's not too serious, but it's also not so funny that it seems ridiculous.
Yeah, and again, Darren Morgan's ability to almost comment on the show, comment on itself, is great, because like Mulder then goes on that spiel about like aliens and stuff, and there's a great line where the sheriff, whose name I can't remember, goes like, "Does the FBI really keep tabs on these things?" And then Duchovny just delivers the most deadpan "No," and and I had to pause the episode because I was laughing a bit too hard at that. I think it's just a great, it's the self-awareness of it, and Duchovny kind of overplaying the deadpan nature of who Mulder usually is. I mean, Morgan has a very, very strong idea of all the personality traits that I think are flaws of Mulder. He really amplifies them to 10. Well, amplifies them to 11 when he gets to write an episode. And a lot of Mulder's ambivalence and like social... well, or lack of social graces at times really comes into play, and I think it just play. And I just love that line, and I just think it's brilliant.
Well, what do you think about the characterization of Scully in this episode? Because I always thought that Mulder and Scully sort of swap places in this episode, that compared to like a traditional X-Files episode, in the sense that Scully seems to be the more rational, calm one. She sort of solves the mystery. She's cleaning her gun. You know, she's the one giving Mulder all the answers. And Mulder seems to be a slightly more ridiculous one. He seems, you know, I think there's a very gratuitous scene later on, which I'll mention, where he runs into a doorway in basically semi-clothes, which is what you'd expect maybe a female character to do normally on screen. Instead, it's David Duchovny semi-clothed. So what do you think of Darren Morgan's characterization of Scully?
There's a scene later on which I think pretty much has Darren Morgan show how the characterization of Scully is his commentary on the character of Scully as a whole in the whole series. But I think Darren Morgan, I think, is probably one of the first writers to actually realize certain issues of Scully as a character in parts to the premise of the X-Files. And I remember reading an article from, I think, Darren Mooney, which kind of sums up the... And I was trying to find it to be able to quote a passage from it, but then realised he's actually written a lot about all the episodes, so I couldn't remember which episode it was that I was reading. But he stated, and I very share the view, that the nature of the X-Files is believer, sceptic, battle the paranormal. And 99.9 times out of 10, the paranormal answer is usually the right one. And that kind, I've always felt that betrays Scully as a character, in terms of she's a very strong, independent, capable scientist, but because of the nature of the show, she's mostly always wrong. And I think that sometimes does a bit of a disservice to the character at times, because of the way that the show is. It's highly likely she's never right most of the time. She's never going to be right. Which if there's a flaw with the X-Files, I would have liked a few more instances of perhaps Scully's viewpoint being the correct one. And there's an argument to be made that for the majority of it, Scully's sceptical view is actually the correct one in this episode. But I think what Darren Morgan does is he's able to use Scully's sceptical nature and flip it on its head so that she's still Scully and she still plays the role she plays. But the way that the episode unfolds is that Scully manages to be the sane one in a sea of madness, whereas usually it's madness and Scully's trying to be the voice of reason, but she ends up being another dissenting voice telling Mulder that he's wrong. Whereas in this one, she ends up kind of being right, but then there's still Mulder being right as well. And it doesn't betray Scully as a character, because you've got pretty much two lines of story that happen with each other. So you've got all these like biological deaths that just happen to involve cockroaches, but then the deaths are natural, but then the cockroaches are something else completely entirely.
She's also the only one in the episode to do any research, really. I mean, Mulder doesn't really do anything except come up with these like incredible leaps of logic, which he does all the time in the X-Files. You know, he has a theory which he seems to pluck out of thin air. Sometimes it has a little bit of evidence to back it up, but a huge number of like a huge majority of the time, it's just him, you know, searching for the nearest paranormal explanation. And in this episode, Scully actually does the research. She's the one shown at the computer, looking things up. She's the one who is recalling the sort of medical information that she knows, I assume, from medical school. So I do think Darren Morgan's writing her as a more, perhaps maybe more knowledgeable, useful character in this episode than Mulder. So the next scene has a car pull up, and as we said, it was the sheriff, Sheriff Frass. And Frass is a technical term for, I think it's a technical term, for insect manure, or insect shit, basically. So that's kind of ironic that the sheriff is, his last name is a reference for insect shit. He's played by Dion Anderson, the actor, and he thinks Mulder's sitting there waiting for his drug dealer in the dock. But once he finds out that Mulder is an FBI agent, he enlists his help in investigating a nearby cockroach attack, which is the attack that we saw in the teaser of the exterminator basically dying in the basement of the scientist's house. Mulder then calls Scully from the crime scene, if, I don't know if you can call it a crime scene, but the scene where the guy is lying on the ground dead, which is in Miller's Grove, which is a town with a science community in Massachusetts. So that's why there's so many scientists involved in this story, is because an area where there's lots of research labs and institutes. All the witnesses to the cockroach attacks from the last few days have been scientists. So Mulder assumes that scientists are credible witnesses, which I liked that. I thought, yes, you're finally starting to, you know, feel some sort of connection to scientists, probably through your work with Scully. Mulder crouches over the body of the pest controller. Scully tells him about how people can die from anaphylactic shock if they're allergic to cockroaches. And Mulder initially seems quite like he's willing to sort of hypothesize about some sort of paranormal explanation for why he thinks actually it might actually be a cockroach killed this man. But Scully sort of says, no, you know, a lot of people are allergic to cockroaches. And I think at this point she's sitting on the floor in front of her television eating what looks like a salad for dinner. And... and Mulder seems to accept her theory, and basically they hang up on each other.
It's more a case that he kind of cuts her off pretty much every single time. And I know, and I, particularly on previous episodes of the X-Cast, I know whilst he hasn't kept tally board of it, I know Tony has pretty much noted that he does this a lot, where he just kind of cuts Scully off mid-conversation. And again, I've got a feeling that Darren Morgan knew this, and is just playing it for comic effect, which he does quite repeatedly, and it's never not funny.
Well, it's always funny, because Mulder does this not just on the phone in other episodes, but he leaves Scully in random places. Like, one time, I can't remember which episode it is, but he actually leaves her with the alien bounty hunter, and then gets into a car, or gets on a boat or something, and you can see her sort of standing there, like, where are you going? And he's like, see you later, you know? So he's... I have to say, he's quite abrupt, isn't he? When he wants to go do something, he sort of waits for either Scully to chase after him, or he just kind of leaves her where she is. So yeah, so you're right. It's definitely a nod to that, and it is really funny in this episode, especially when, well, we'll get into it, but especially when he cuts off abruptly because he's enamored with somebody else. So meanwhile, there's the next scene is this three young people getting high by. I don't know what they were doing, like smoking manure, burning manure, like inhaling the vapours for manure. And these are the three stoners. So the three stoners are three actors. Well, actually, it's actually two actors, because there's always the third stoner is always the one that ends up dead. So it's only ever the two actors that are repeatedly in the X-Files. And they also appear in the Weremonster episode of season 10, and they also appear in Quagmire, which is one of my favourite episodes. And there's always three of them, and they're always trying to get high in some way, like by licking a toad or smoking pot or something, and one of them always ends up dead. So, I don't know if this is the first episode they're in, but they are a recurring theme, basically, these three very stupid people who get into trouble. So they're burning manure and somehow smoking the vapours to get high, and then one of the stoners sees a cockroach climb into a little cut in his arm and under his skin in an effort, and it's kind of a really creepy effect, and under basically in an effort to get the cockroach out from under his skin, he panics and grabs a razor blade and starts to like hack at his arm. So I thought this was really disgusting. I have trouble watching this scene even years later. I have to kind of look away. What did you think of it?
If you've got a checklist of things that you have to have in an X-Files episode, some kind of weird body horror moment, you have to have it. And I mean, it's not played as much for humour this time around, but yeah, I mean, I'm not a horror movie fan, because one, I'm a real wuss, and two, and two, whenever there's like stuff like body horror or like extreme violence like that, I really don't like it. And it was a bit yeesh. And particularly, I'm not a fan of insects either, so combining the two of them, it's like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's done to great effect. It's one of those things that I think universally most human beings would find disgusting, the idea of something crawling and bubbling beneath the skin. And the way they do it is you know, it's good special effects, or I assume they probably did it with some sort of prosthetics, but it's definitely very effective. So all the stoners start freaking out, the three stoners start freaking out, and the other two start trying to prevent the third one from cutting his wrists, and they're screaming, and then we flash to a bottle of chemical dog shampoo called Die Flea Die, which is quite a succinct name, you know, it does what it says on the package. And we see that Scully's washing her dog Queequeg in the kitchen sink. So actually this episode it harks back to Clyde Brookman's final repose, because that's where Queequeg first entered Scully's life. And then sadly, Queequeg doesn't obviously end up having a long life after this, as we well know. So this is another one of those chores that Scully seems to be doing on a Saturday night, cleaning her gun, washing her dog. Poor Scully needs to get herself a boyfriend. Her phone rings, and it is Mulder asking her to come to Miller's Grove to help him investigate the death of the stoner who we just saw hacking at his wrists in the previous scene. And the poor guy severed his own artery with the razor blade, which sounds horrible. And Mulder describes the scene to Scully, and she then comes up with a completely rational explanation about a delusional sort of psychotic condition that is caused by drug abuse, that where people think bugs are infesting their skin. And Mulder seems a little bit deflated and then hangs up on her. So what did you think of this scene?
Again, it is pretty much playing on the usual Scully. Gives a very basic view, well, gives a realistic view of what could have happened based on what we've seen. But looking back, if you watch this a second time, you can kind of see that she's in the right due to stuff we'll find it later on. The magic of this is the amount, the speed in which they speak, the way they speak, and the fact that every time you keep cutting to the fact that, like, Scully's in the middle of washing a dog. And it's just all very second nature to her. So, like, and it gets amplified. This kind of thing is amplified in the next scene. We'll talk about later on. But the fact that she's just saying, oh, yeah, it'd be this, this, and this, and this, and this, and then this. And goes, oh, okay. Hang up.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's because it's over the phone. I totally agree with you. I think if they were face-to-face, they'd probably debate it a bit more, wouldn't they? I also think that this is just the beginning of the fact of events escalating. And as the events escalate, Scully's feelings about the case, you know, get more and more sort of involved and intense. So, and I almost feel a little bit like Darren Morgan. And of course, as we see later on, the town, the hysteria in the town just gets more and more extreme. One of the things that I think that I could be wrong, but I suspect that Darren Morgan's sort of doing is almost like parodying what happens in a very serious Monster of the Week episode, where the deaths get more and more gruesome, you know, and the sort of paranormal part of the storyline just gets more and more outlandish. It almost reminds me a little bit of The Hand du Valets, I think it is, where there's an episode, I mean, it wasn't written by Darren Morgan, but there's the episode where there's Satan worshippers in a school, and that gets more and more and more hysterical as things go on. First, frogs rain from the sky, and by the end of it, you've got, you know, like a whole manner of really insane things happening. So I feel a little bit like he's sort of parodying that here. So the first death could be anaphylactic shock. The second death is even more extreme. The guy doesn't just stop breathing. He actually like tries to kill himself with a razor blade. And Mulder's theories get more and more outlandish, and Scully gets more and more invested in talking to him over the phone. And the town gets more and more hysterical until eventually, obviously, we have shit flying through the air, like literal shit flying through the air. So at this point, Mulder finds something. So after hanging up from Scully, he finds something, and he finds it. Basically, it's a cockroach, just a tiny cockroach. And he tries to grab it and accidentally crushes it with his hand. And the sheriff is actually like, oh, God, you should have just let me pick it up. Next time, leave the cockroaches to me. I don't think the sheriff really thinks very highly of Mulder. And it's a strange-looking cockroach, and it appears to be made of metal. And basically, when Mulder picks it up, he catches his fingers on it, and he cuts his fingers. I'm not sure I like this part of the episode, this aspect of the episode, the idea of mechanical bugs. What do you think?
I quite like it because it adds an extra element of someone had to have built these, someone had to have programmed these, someone would have to have been controlling these. And kind of adds the conspiracy element back into the episode plot. So, I mean, I don't think the episode actually goes into the whole who's behind them as much as it should do. But I think the fact that these are now robotics means that they are man-made or perhaps alien-made, rather than just being freaks of nature. And again, it ties back into the fact that one of the key things of the X-Files is the whole conspiracy angle. I think that adds that layer to it.
Yeah, so what you're saying is it's like mixing a little bit of the whole sort of mythology aspect to a Monster of the Week episode. Mulder's fingers, so that the fact they were cut by the cockroach's metallic skeleton, he is being treated by Dr. Rick Newton, who's played by Bill Dow, who we normally know in The X-Files as Chuck. I actually really like Bill Dow as an actor. I think he's great in this episode, and I also think he's great as Chuck. What do you think of Chuck as a character? Like, what do you think of Bill Dow as an actor? But anyway, in this particular episode, he actually plays Dr. Newton, and he seems to get a little bit sort of panicked at the idea of killer cockroaches. And he and Mulder chat about the cockroaches, and he seems scared and nervous, which is sort of like a precursor to the panic that we eventually see later on in the town in the episode. And the sheriff comes in and sort of asks him to look at the body of the poor, unfortunate young druggie. And Dr. Newton is just so frustrated that Mulder hasn't actually given him any information about the cockroach. He's like, should I move my family? Should we leave town? And Mulder's like, I don't know. That he's so stressed about this that he decides to go use the bathroom. Big no-no. You know, if you're in the middle of like a cockroach invasion, the last place you want to go is to the bathroom. But anyway. And there's one of my favourite lines in this whole episode is when Mulder has no idea what's going on, and Darren Morgan always seems to write Mulder as a character who seems a little bit clueless, right? He doesn't know what's going on, which is, like you said, quite the opposite from normal episodes of The X-Files, where Mulder is the one that has this sort of almost supernatural knowing power. He says he knows nothing about bugs, basically. That's why he's so bewildered. It's like, because it isn't about aliens at all, even though he keeps trying at certain points to make it about aliens, but he can't. I think one of my favorite lines is that he says something like, oh, I can't remember what it is now, but it says something like, so the sheriff is quizzing him again and again, like, you know, you sure you don't know what's going on with the cockroaches? And Mulder says, I see the correlation, but just because I work for the federal government doesn't mean I'm an expert on cockroaches. And I actually laughed out loud at that. I thought that was a genius line. And the way David Duchovny delivers it, he's got such good comic timing, you know. The way he delivers it is just sort of world weary. So then we see Dr. Newton in a toilet stall taking a break and reading a magazine on the toilet. The stall begins to fill with cockroaches, and that's really obviously creepy. I mean, this is yet again exploiting human beings' fear of dirt, of insects. I mean, the last place you want to see an insect is in a bathroom. In fact, that's probably one of the first places that you probably would see a cockroach, but still. Mulder and the sheriff are still talking, and the sheriff reveals that there's been government experiments in the local area, and that there was some sort of agent, or at least kind of covert government experiments. There was some sort of agent in the local area and a sort of government test site just outside of town. And this obviously piques Mulder's interest. The sheriff mentions killer bees. He thinks that the experiments are involving killer bees, which is a nice foreshadowing of the future X-Files storylines that we haven't seen yet, where there are like bees involved. Especially as well, also the movie, because we know that there's a very famous bee in that movie. There's also lots of experiments being done with bees. So suddenly they hear a scream, and they rush into the toilet and find Dr. Newton dead and a single cockroach in the sink. Mulder tries to pick it up, and it jumps out of his hand and escapes down the drain. And yet again, the sheriff is like, dude, you should let me catch the cockroaches, because you're crap at this. I mean, he doesn't say it like that, but, you know, I'm paraphrasing. So there's a great camera shot looking up back through the drain, up at Mulder and the sheriff. So it's like a cockroach's view of Mulder and the sheriff peering it down into the drain, looking for it. So I wanted to ask you at this point, like, what do you think of the way the episode's directed, like the camera angles and the way that we're often given close-ups of Mulder's face in various different scenes?
I like it. Again, it gives it a very different feel to your usual X-Files episode. I've seen like articles that argue that it's like its own separate parallel universe in how, or the Darren Morgan universe, as I think I'll call it, where it doesn't feel like a normal X-Files episode. But I think it highlights the comic / satirical tone that the episode is aiming for. And two, it just keeps things interesting. Like, for example, with the point of view of the cockroach, like you're seeing these two massive humans just looking down at you. And it's just a lot more interesting just having the master shot and close-ups all the time, and it helps visualise the storytelling, and perhaps also the the eventual paranoia that will heighten as well, because it's just highlighting the fact that these cockroaches are everywhere. So, and could be seeing you from all sorts of angles. So.
Yeah, it's a nice sort of nod as well back to the teaser, where it's almost a little bit like, you know, there's parts of this episode where we're seeing things from the bug's point of view. So, you know, the idea that human beings think they're so superior. In the teaser, he squashes the bug. He delivers this, you know, eulogy, and then he sort of squashes the bug with contempt, and then the bugs kill him. Or maybe they don't kill him, but they're somehow involved. And then later on in the episode, we see this camera shot of Mulder from the point of view of a cockroach. And a cockroach has multiple eyes, so you see Mulder sort of refracted in several different viewpoints. So it's kind of nice as well, because we're kind of getting the point of view of the bugs, in a way, kind of getting the point of view of a creature that isn't as alien to us as extraterrestrials would be, I suppose. So it does kind of fit in very well with the X-Files. So then Mulder calls Scully, because obviously there's another dead body to talk about. And I love how Scully answers immediately. Like, she doesn't say, hello, Mulder, or it's Scully. She says, who died? Or she says something like, who died now?
And what I think one of the things you can tell, particularly in a Darren Morgan episode, is that Gillian Anderson just looks like she's having the absolute time of her life. Just like she's having the most fun. Just like being so deadpan and going, who died now?
Yeah, she does, doesn't she? Scully, at this point, is sitting on her sofa, all kind of comfy, and she's reading Breakfast at Tiffany's while she's on the phone to Mulder. I mean, she was reading before he called. And this is actually a funny nod. This is a little bit of a trivia. It's a funny nod to the fact that it's written by Truman Capote, and it's a funny nod to the fact that David Duchovny was on Celebrity Jeopardy, a quiz show on television, and he had a question about this particular book. And I think it was like one of the final questions on the quiz, and he lost, basically. I think he got quite far, and he lost because the question about Breakfast at Tiffany's he couldn't actually answer. So there's like a little nod to David Duchovny's cluelessness there, really. Which I thought was quite clever. Scully diagnoses Dr. Newton's death over the phone, as she does, because she's such a boss, as a brain aneurysm. Which is another horrible way to die. I mean, even if there's no cockroaches involved, it's like you died straining on the toilet. She sort of laughs at the idea of Mulder coming across an infestation of killer cockroaches, because he sort of implies that's what he's referring to. And Mulder looks so deadpan. I think she sort of says, you know, this couldn't be killer cockroaches or something like that. And Mulder's face, like, David Duchovny does such a good job of like looking really sort of dryly disappointed. I mean, because that's ultimately what he's starting to suspect.
Yeah.
So he's a bit weary now at this point. So this is I think by now we're on to the fourth or the third. No, I think it's like the fourth telephone conversation. And Scully has yet again offered a rational, correct explanation. So Mulder is, at this point, clutching at straws. And Scully is basically giving him all the answers over the phone. So the next scene has Mulder breaking into a government test site. So he goes to find the test site the sheriff told him about. This time Scully actually calls him rather than him calling Scully. And she's actually researching cockroaches, which I think is really sweet. She probably put down her book and thought, I'm going to give him a hand here. I can help him out. And mm-hmm. Despite the fact that she said it, she didn't think the cockroaches were involved, she obviously had second thoughts, because now she's researching them while eating the biggest tub of ice cream I have ever seen. I mean, I know it's America and they have like supersized food, but it's like a bucket of ice cream. And she's starting to get convinced that the cockroaches might somehow be involved in the deaths, and that perhaps a new species of cockroaches, maybe possibly from outside of the US, could possibly be there in Massachusetts and be attracted to people. And Mulder tells that the Department of Agriculture has been conducting secret experiments at the test site that he's currently at. And this is one of my favourite bits of the episode. Scully tells him that she doesn't think this is a legitimate reason to trespass on government property, but it's too late. He's already in. And this is one of those things that you find again and again in the X-Files. Scully says, don't do something. And Mulder's like, I'm going to do it. And she says, don't do it. Don't do it. And he's like, I've already done it. You know, whether it's jumping on a moving train, whether it's climbing into a box car out in the desert in Mexico, he tells her he's going to do something. And then she says, no, don't do it. But it's too late because he's already done it. So
I think the show kind of, well, or the show, or Darren Morgan kind of digs into, has a little dig at perhaps the reoccurrence of the Mulder breaks into government facilities trope that has probably, that's been established a few times already. I mean, and I think Scully's lines, I don't think that this case warrants us, no, I've done it. And I think, and particularly I think it's, I think a lot of the facility, the government facility break-ins have all been very close to the myth arc. If I'm correct, I can't think of many standalone episodes where he's actually broken into a government facility before. Someone will probably correct me. But I think the show's kind of like saying, hang on, you can't break into another government facility. It's not as important or worthy of the dramatic potential that can come across with the idea of breaking into the government again. But then he does it anyway. And it's just mainly for, purely for comic effect again. So, and I think it's just a great little kind of build-up, particularly with the pace and the pace in Gillian Anderson's delivery of, I don't think that this case warrants, and it just suddenly is cut off. So, like, whereas you had Scully cutting off a lot of Mulder's outlandish theories, it's Mulder that's cutting off Scully's self-awareness of what's going on. And again, I think it works really well, and it's another example of Darren Morgan using the episode to self-analyse and perhaps almost, dare I say, a critique of an occasional trope that's happened again and again where it seems like Mulder's having to break into something somewhere again.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's definitely a little bit of a critique because it's almost a little bit... inflates Mulder's ego a little bit for him to be constantly breaking in to secure locations. Almost like he's like the daredevil investigator, you know, and in this particular episode he breaks in and then proceeds to describe a very mundane suburban house to Scully over the phone like there's nothing, and then he's walking around with his flashlight, you know, in the dark, which is typically what Mulder and Scully do, is use their flashlights in the dark. But actually he could have just turned the light switch on, and that's what, well, we'll talk about it, but that's what happens. Someone comes in and turns the light switch on, and you sort of think, you fool, why don't you just go in there and turn the light on? Like, but it doesn't fit with his, you know, like, psyche, does it? You know, that's not very daredevil, it's not very investigative, you know, just to walk in and turn the light on. So he walks around describing this very boring house to Scully, and then he sees that the walls are moving, and he goes and he pokes the wall with his finger, and there's a little hole in the wall, and out of the hole swarms cockroaches, and that's pretty creepy actually. That's like there is an actual cockroach infestation in the house, and he screams, but that's because he basically dropped his flashlight. And Scully's like really concerned, she's like, what? And then the light is suddenly switched on, and standing there is Dr. Bambi Berenbaum. He's wearing the tightest, smallest shorts that I've ever seen a scientist wear. And she works for the USDA Agricultural Research Service. Immediately Mulder sort of very kind of heroically says to Scully, like, I gotta go, and hangs up on her. Scully's like, Mulder! Screaming down the phone, Mulder! Mulder is obviously attracted to Dr. Bambi, and who wouldn't be?
In terms of the character of Dr. Bambi Berenbaum, again, I think it's one of these deliberate pokes at perhaps not the X-Files in general, because I can't think of the X-Files doing this kind of thing regularly, but particularly in the mid-90s, you'll probably have, like, in the age of the standalone science fiction / fantasy shows, you probably have guest characters that are quite attractive women in the late 20s, early 30s, who have 30 years experience, or like have the knowledge of like a 60-year-old in certain things, but then also happen to be very attractive and appealing to a certain demographic of, and I think, and I don't think the X-Files does that particularly, because I think it's been quite generous and more realistic in terms of its casting in that kind of thing. But I think Darren Morgan is probably using the opportunity to lampoon that trope as well, whereas you've got I don't want to say unrealistic casting, because that implies that not women can't be whatever
entomologist.
Yes. It's just that you've got... She has the wisdom of someone who's perhaps 20 years older than the character is.
Yeah, it's a bit like a character from fan fiction or something. Like a Mary Sue, you know? Yeah, Darren Morgan is definitely using Bambi in a satirical way because of the fact that he also plays her character against Scully's character in the sense that he kind of contrasts the two in the episode, and Scully is obviously like the more realistic woman who's just withering about Bambi, but we'll get onto that. So Bambi and Mulder go back to Bambi's lab and discuss the cockroach research she's doing. And she's unusually excited about cockroaches. I mean, she's sort of freakishly excited about bugs. She thinks UFOs are actually insect swarms in the night sky. And Mulder seems a little bit, I don't know, he seems a little bit deflated by that too, actually, because obviously he doesn't want to think that. But he seems entranced by her. And she says some pretty funny lines. She said, "Everything about insects is fascinating." Mulder's phone rings, and this is one of my favourite moments. Mulder's phone rings, and it's obviously Scully, and he basically just says, you know, "Not now," and then hangs up on her.
That is just perfect comic timing. That is just amazing.
So I think that's very, very funny. And he also similarly doesn't really give a shit about cockroaches. I mean, he makes it clear that he's not a bug fan, but he doesn't make it clear to her. It's clear to us, the audience. It's clear, obviously, later on, it's clear to Scully. But he sort of says something to her like, "I find insects fascinating." And she's like, "Really?" And we know that he's just saying that. Like, he doesn't find insects fascinating. Because earlier in the episode, he's like, "I don't know anything about insects." You know, so he's just trying to impress her. We flash next to the Miller's Grove Motor Lodge where Mulder is staying and where there's some guests are staying, including the scientist from the beginning, who is left his house because, obviously, of the cockroach infestation. And one of them is watching some alarming news reports about cockroaches. And it's funny, this is a little glimpse into the fact that the town is actually becoming more and more hysterical about the cockroaches. There's a mention of the fact that cockroaches might be spreading the Ebola virus, which is really funny. Mulder, who is sleeping in another room, wakes up after dreaming about... I think he's dreaming, or at least he's sort of half awake, and he thinks there might be a cockroach in the bed, so he can't sleep. So he wakes up and calls Scully. Scully, meanwhile, has been sleeping with the phone beside her bed. So he hasn't actually spoken to her until he hung up on her and said, "Not now." So she's been lying there. You know, it does seem like she's managed to fall asleep, but she's got the phone on the pillow right next to her in case he calls. And she's like, "Are you okay? What happened? And he tells her about Dr. Bambi, and he relates some cockroach trivia to Scully that Bambi told him. And Scully's like, "Bambi, your name is Bambi." Because Bambi's parents were naturists, and that's why they called her Bambi.
My theory that might have got lost in the thread of the X-Cast in that naturalist, the more really, really big Disney fans. So she's got brothers and sisters, Dumbo, Pinocchio, and a great older brother, Basil the Great Mouse Detective, or Basil for short.
Scully seems a little jealous of, and I'm very incredulous at the idea of Bambi, but she seems a little jealous at this point.
Her name is Bambi line, I think, is actually perhaps the funniest line reading in the actual episode. I think it's just the disbelief. Almost. It's not overdone, but it's not underplayed either. So her name is Bambi. Her name is Bambi, and it's just the fact that she keeps focusing on that is just hilarious.
So while Mulder's on the phone to Scully, he tells her about a traumatic childhood experience with a praying mantis, which he likens to looking like an alien.
again,
Darren, weirdo.
Yeah, Dan Morgan is just taking the piss in terms of, particularly like whenever you hear Mulder talk about, particularly to do with Samantha, or an instance where he thought, "I think aliens are real. I thought Bigfoot was real because I saw Bigfoot." Or I think he's kind of mocking the, "I have a personal stake in this because I believe in what we're having at this, in the paranormality that we're having at this very moment."
I mean, in this scene, Mulder's quite poetic about the experience. You know, he sort of, he sort of talks about, you know, that he was confronted with the wonders of the natural world and he had this reaction. And I think what's interesting about this whole episode is that Mulder is very poetic over the phone. Like he's, you know, he's like, he's thinking very deeply. He's talking about things in a very sort of romantic way. And every single time Scully just shuts him down with this rationality. And at this point he talks about how he screams and he's like, not a girly scream. And then she sort of, and then he sort of talks about his experience. He sort of says about, you know, what it meant and everything. And then Scully's like, are you sure it wasn't a girly scream, Mulder? And she's half awake as well. You know, she's like lying in bed. So I thought this part of this of the episode, that the dialogue between them was really snappy and was just really well written, really. So while Mulder's on the phone to Scully, he hears a cry in another hotel room. And Scully's like, what was that? And then he hangs up on her again. And she's like, Mulder! She's like, oh, what? And then some guests go to find out what the scream is, and the guy who was watching television in his hotel room is dead and he's covered in cockroaches, and they all freak out and they all start screaming. And then David Duchovny, Fox Mulder, runs down the hallway. He's only had time to just pull on his jeans and he's got his gun in his hand, and then he bursts open into the room and he's basically there bare-chested wearing his jeans. And I'm sorry, I feel that this is intentionally gratuitous. I feel they did this deliberately, and I have no problem with it. No problem whatsoever. So then we flash back to Scully, and she's packing. So it's interesting that the first sign of Mulder working with another science, female scientist, and Scully's like, that's it, I'm ready. I'm packing my bag. I'm going to go help him. Mulder calls her and tells her he thinks the man died from anaphylactic shock. So they sort of swapped over places now. He's thinking it's something natural, and Scully is actually thinking that it might be something extraordinary and strange. So he says, well, I think he died from panic, because basically everybody's panicking in the town, and he died from shock. And Scotty's like, no, two cases of anaphylactic shock in like less than a day, you know, this is definitely strange, I'm coming to help you. And he's like, I don't think you need to come, no, it's fine, you don't need to come here. And she seems very determined. Now, is she going because the deaths are turning out to be strange and weird and can't be explained? Or is she going because of Bambi?
I like how deliberately vague it is. I mean, because if you take the shipper view of it, and I'm not really a shipper of Mulder and Scully. Well, at least the romantic side of their relationship doesn't really interest me as much as other parts of the show. But that view, you could probably see that she's a bit jealous. She's a bit jealous of him and Bambi. But then again, the episode's taking a very interesting view in that now Mulder's kind of believing the whole what Scully's telling him. But then Scully's starting to believe the whole cockroach thing. But it's still in the realms of believability, because I think Scully's saying that it's a new form of cockroach, and which might not be supernatural, but might just be a natural evolution in its case, which I think is a very... Darren Morgan doing some really good writing in being able to argue that Scully is still being sceptical about what's happening, but he's still leaning towards the more supernatural element of the episode, whereas Mulder kind of drifting towards it's all coincidence. And you could argue that's what's attracting her to the case as well. Maybe it's both.
Yeah, it's probably both. And I think to a certain extent, you know, it could be romantic jealousy, but it could also be jealousy that he's got another female scientist to help him out. Like, she's kind of like, I want to be in on the action too, you know? Like she's his scientist, you know? She's the one that's going to come up with the scientific explanation for things in this scenario. And she's like, nah, I'm not having someone else do this. But I don't think any of it's conscious. I think she's unconsciously jealous. And she's also starting now, her interest is now peaked. I mean, we knew it was peaked because she was researching cockroaches while eating ice cream. So she's definitely, she's like involved now. She wants to find out what's going to happen. And I think there's an element of it that perhaps maybe Mulder can't sort this out for himself. And she's like, I need to get down there and sort this shit out without trying to... No pun intended. She needs to sort it out, so she's going to go. Mulder finds a cockroach at the crime scene, and he takes the cockroach he's found at the scene, and this time he manages to capture it, like, in a little box. And he takes the cockroach he's found to Bambi, and she says it's a mechanical bug. She has this moment where she, like, looks at the cockroach's genitalia, and she gets excited by the cockroach's genitalia, and we'll leave that there, shall we? And she says it's a mechanical bug, so it's not actually a real live insect. It's an insect that is made of metal and has been constructed. Mulder then goes to visit the nearby robotics institute to speak to Dr. Ivanov, thank you.
Yeah.
I'm glad one of us knows how to pronounce things. This is played by Ken Kramer, who we have seen in The X-Files before. He was in the episode three, which was about vampires, and he played a doctor in that episode. But in this episode, he's playing a scientist who has more than a passing resemblance to Stephen Hawking. Do you think this was deliberate on Darren Morgan's part to make Ivanov like Stephen Hawking?
It never actually occurred to me until you mentioned it, actually, but I think it was more... I think it was more a case of trying to have something linking to robotics, but also just be quirky for the sake of being quirky, and because it's a Darren Morgan episode.
So you think he's making fun of, like, strange and quirky scientists more than actually like linking it to a particular scientist?
Yeah, I think again what Darren Morgan's probably does well, and he's doing again, as I mentioned with Bambi, is making a memorable, unique character that with perhaps a visual element that you won't forget, as well as using him to comment on something below the main narrative.
So Dr. Ivanov explains his insect robots to Mulder. So he's been developing robots for NASA, because the idea is when they go out to investigate planets, even better than probes are robots that have some level of intelligence rather than human beings. And he basically dismisses Mulder's belief in aliens, or he dismisses Mulder's belief in biological aliens. He said if there's any sort of intelligent alien life, it will probably be robotic. That makes contact with humans and Earth, it'll probably be robotic. I love how he just dismisses the alien explanation. It's a little bit like Bambi dismissing the concept of UFOs and Scully dismissing the concept of killer cockroaches. It's like Mulder's being basically his like beliefs are being basically dismissed by every scientist that he meets.
He's being cock-blocked.
Yeah, in this episode, every single day.
Cock-blocked by cockroaches.
So Mulder gives Dr. Ivanov a bit of the cockroach that he captured, and the doctor is both confused and disturbed because he doesn't know what it is. And he's like stumped. And at this point, the X-Files breaks the fourth wall because a cockroach crawls across the screen to freak out the viewers at home. Because when it was first shown, I assume people must have been like, oh my god, there's an actual cockroach in my apartment. Especially if you were in a place in the US where it was hot and there was cockroaches around. I thought that was a nice touch, actually. A really good touch.
It's the scene transitions have been quite interesting and have their own stylized or creative flair throughout. I mean, there's like a, for example, when earlier in the episode where Frass asks Mulder who's on the phone, oh, it's my drug dealer, and then it cuts to the drugs being cut by the stoners, and they're on about the screams, and you hear the scream from someone else. It's just full of little moments like that.
Yeah, it's very self-aware writing, isn't it? It's like the X-Files is kind of aware of itself and the way it's telling its own story, which I think is really clever. In the next scene, we find ourselves in a gas station grocery store, and there's panic with people buying insecticide and like random food. Basically, the town has gone crazy and people are panic buying, and they're practically looting the place. I'm not sure how much of it they're going to pay for. There is a wonderful little moment where a guy in a sailor's uniform steals some chocolate and some women's pantyhose, which I didn't know this, but having looked at the episode, is a reference to rationing during World War II, because chocolate and pantyhose were severely, sort of heavily rationed during World War II. And so it's funny this sailor would be like, oh my God, the world's coming to an end. Like, cockroaches are attacking. I know what I need. Chocolate and pantyhose. I thought that was really clever. So there's a car crash just outside as Scully is entering the grocery store because she's made it to the town. And Gillian Anderson gives a pretty realistic reaction to that car crash, which makes me wonder if she didn't actually know it was going to happen. And then she walks into the grocery store and she asks to see a roadmap and just seems completely and utterly disgusted by the chaos happening. And somebody's like, you know, the cockroaches are coming to kill us all. And she's like, what? And then one guy's like, no, no, it's the Ebola. The Ebola's coming to kill us. And we're all going to be bleeding from our nipples, which is a great line. Scully just rolls her eyes. I like how this man thinks the worst thing that can happen to you is to bleed from your nipples. But anyway, so she's like, all right, enough. So she basically fires her gun. I think she fires the gun.
Yeah, she just yells and raises a badge up. Because I thought she shoots the gun in the air at first until I rewatched it about earlier. And it was like, she just raises her arm and just shouts. So I don't know where I got the gun shooting from.
I mean, perhaps shooting a gun in a very crowded supermarket would probably be a bad idea anyway.
Yeah.
But I think we're so used to people in films shooting their guns to get people's attention, which is a terrible way to get people's attention, but still. And she sort of tries to calm everybody down and restore some calm. And everyone sort of seems like they might be about to calm down. And then two women start wrestling over a bottle of insecticide. And they knock over a display of what appears to be chocolate candy. And the chocolate candy gets spread everywhere. And there's a really good moment where a guy, his 15 minutes of fame, this little bit part, he basically screams, seeing the chocolate candy on the floor, and he's like, it's the roaches! thinking they're cockroaches. And then basically chaos erupts again, and everyone starts running from the supermarket and getting into their cars and driving away. And Scully's just, oh my god, I can't believe what's going on. She's just so basically disgusted with it all. And she goes and just rolls her eyes and eats some of the chocolate off the floor. Which I thought was funny. So what do you think of the panic? I mean, basically, this is referencing War of the Worlds, which is actually the town is actually referencing the town in War of the Worlds. And the actual title of the episode, War of the Copperhages, actually is a nod to War of the Worlds. Because when Orson Welles first did a radio broadcast of the War of the Worlds, like, adaptation, audio adaptation, it caused panic because people actually thought aliens were landing. So this is kind of a reference to that. What do you think of this chaos, basically?
I love it. I think it's one of the better scenes in the episode. And I think it's also a scene, I think the scene which kind of demonstrates Scully's role in the show as a whole. In it, whereas you've got all this chaos going around, and if Scully was the main character and Mulder was... If it was Scully and Mulder rather than Mulder and Scully, you'd probably be Scully being the lone voice of reason in a sea of complete and utter madness. Which, if you look at the episodes in a certain way, you probably can see that. And it just highlights just how well Scully's scepticism can work in, like, utter chaos. And when she says, everyone's going to be fine if you all just calm down, that is actually what will have everything. Everyone would be all right, but it's just a mass hysteria of of everything. You kind of liken it to Mulder's obsession with, like, aliens and his quest to find out what happened to Samantha. In that, the amount of time she said everything will be fine, Mulder, if you just think about things rationally, and then he completely ignores her and then just goes off and does something random. It's exactly the same as it is here on a different scale. So, yeah, so she just, like, rolls her eyes and goes, yeah, I'm used to it. And then to cap it all off, she just walks over, bends over, picks up the candy, eats it, and it's just, like, one of the funniest things in the episode.
So Mulder, meanwhile, is sitting with a depressed Dr. Ivanov, who's drinking whiskey. And, I mean, I think he's depressed because he's, you know, encountered something that he can't scientifically explain. So Mulder leaves him, and as he's walking out the institute, he encounters a cockroach on the floor in the hallway, and he picks up the cockroach and looks at it, and that's how we get the famous cockroach view of Mulder's face, where the many different eyes of the cockroach see Mulder in sort of different sort of viewpoints. Scully calls him and says she's got a map and she's basically solved the case. I think at this point he might be with Dr. Bambi, actually, and she says Dr. Eckel, who's the doctor, who's the scientist in the very, very beginning of the episode, whose house is being sprayed with poison because there's a cockroach infestation, who seems throughout the episode to be getting more and more panicky about cockroaches himself. She says he's been doing research into methane gas, which comes from manure, and which is stored in a facility in the town. And she thinks the manure might have included cockroaches because the manure has been transported to this town from abroad, and so she thinks it might, there might be a different species of cockroach that has been transported with the manure. So I like how Mulder's been there for days and not solved it, and is basically getting drunk with the scientist, and Scully just walks in, finds a roadmap, and solves the case in minutes, basically, in the middle of a chaotic situation in a grocery store. Bambi and Mulder drive to the warehouse, and Mulder goes inside and finds a lot of shit and cockroaches. And he leaves Bambi in the car because he's like, he says rather heroically, like, no, you better stay in the car because, you know, this isn't safe. I'll go in. Dr. Eckel? I'm not sure how to say his name. Damn, X-Files, give us some normal names. Give us Smith, for God's sake. Has gone a bit crazy due to his fear of the insects, and he threatens Mulder with a gun. And Mulder makes a point of, like, don't shoot a gun in a warehouse full of methane gas because you're going to cause an explosion, obviously. Scully pulls up and has a short exchange with Bambi. So she sort of says something like, oh, he must be Bambi. And then Bambi's like, do you want me to go in and help? And Scully sort of like takes a gun out very, very visibly, sort of cocks it in front of Bambi and says, no, this is no place for entomologists, and sort of strides into the warehouse.
It's a nice little moment where I think that's kind of a reaction to the fact where she goes, oh, Fox told me to stay in the car. And yeah, you can just see her roll her eyes. And it's just, I think Gene Anderson rolling her eyes at Scully is like one of the funniest things, no matter what episode it's in. Whenever Scully rolls her eyes, it's usually within reason. And you can kind of see her roll her eyes and then pulls out the gun, and it's just, it's brilliant.
Scully rolling her eyes has produced many a gif on the internet and many a meme. I mean, just, it's the perfect way to respond incredulously to things is to use a picture of Scully rolling her eyes. So Scully goes into the actual warehouse. Meanwhile, Dr. Eckel is basically losing his mind. And he actually thinks Mulder is a cockroach. And Mulder's like, no, I'm just as human as you. Maybe even more so. Which struck me as a very strange line. It's kind of like a backhanded, like, it's basically like an insult. It's like, Mulder, the guy's suffering from a mental delusion. Like, don't be so mean. He loses his mind and because Scully tries to call Mulder, and the phone ringing sounds like the trilling of a sort of mechanical trilling of a cockroach. He starts shooting. I should mention, actually, that the cockroaches in the warehouse on the manure do seem different than other cockroaches. They make a different kind of sound, and they seem more mechanical. So that's basically the evidence the Mulder wants. Mulder says we should take these cockroaches and study them. But unfortunately, the scientist is having none of it, and he freaks out, thinks Mulder's a giant cockroach, and starts shooting, and he shoots some pipes and methane gas starts leaking and everything's going to blow. And so Mulder starts running towards the exit. He sees Scully in the doorway and he's like, run, you know, the populace is going to blow. And Mulder and Scully barely get out in time. And they just manage to get out and hide behind the car. Bambi sort of hides in the back seat. And the whole warehouse blows up. So they don't get blown up, but unfortunately they are caught up in a shower of flying shit. There's like poop in the air everywhere, and it comes down on Mulder and Scully, and of course it misses Bambi because she's in a car. So at the end of the episode, the only two people really covered in shit are Mulder and Scully. Everyone else is kind of fine.
Is that not like a literal explanation of the show in general, of the shit that Mulder and Scully go through, and then they seem to be the only ones having to deal with the fact they've gone through shit?
And, I mean, both of them are actually quite dignified while being covered in shit. I mean, they're quite stoical about it. You sort of get the feeling that they're kind of used to being covered in shit.
Yeah.
I mean, metaphorical or literal, you know. The sheriff, so the next scene is after the warehouse's fire's been put out, and there's the fire brigade and the police are there, and everybody's standing around holding umbrellas, and because it's raining. And the sheriff comes up and basically gives a report of all the police incidents and fires and stuff that have been happening that night as the town has descended into chaos. And my favourite one is the amount of accidental insecticide poisonings. People have gone so crazy spraying their homes with insecticide that they've asphyxiated themselves. I thought that was really funny. And the sheriff, like, rather... rather slyly jokes about how covered in shit they are. I think he says something like, "You should go home and rest. You look pooped."
Yeah.
And then he walks off kind of chuckling to himself. And Mulder is kind of like, "Oh, ha, ha, ha." The Dr. Ivanov pulls up and asks to have the cockroach sample back from Mulder. So the little mechanical cockroach leg that Mulder had shown him before. And so that he can study it. And then he and Bambi seem to form a connection, an intellectual and spiritual connection. And they walk off together, both sort of chatting about equally geeky stuff like bugs and technology. And Mulder and Scully look on, watch them walk off, and they look on while covered in shit. and Scully says the infamous words, "Smart is sexy," which could describe the X-Files, actually. So the episode finishes with a scene of Mulder writing up the case on a report on his computer. And he says quite a few interesting things about how he thinks, you know, how we see bugs, and maybe how we see bugs is how aliens would see humans, and sort of about your reaction and revulsion to things. And then he looks over and is startled by a big bug on a plate of where he's of, he has a snack on a plate, like a cake or something, and he's eating it sort of absentmindedly while he's typing. And he looks over and he's startled to see a big bug on the plate, which he promptly crushes with a large... I mean, he looks at it first. He really looks at it, you know, and you think maybe he's going to spare the bug after this experience. But no, he promptly crushes it with a very large X-File folder. He sort of slams it down and squishes the bug. And that's where we end completely. And that's basically how the episode sort of started, with a squash bug, and it ends with a squash bug. Well, we asked online, our listeners in the X-Files Basement X-Cast group on Facebook what they thought of this episode, and we had a few responses, so I'm going to read out a few just to give a shout out to some of our listeners. So, Fred, I apologise if I pronounce anyone's name wrong, so please forgive me. I've been pronouncing names wrong this entire episode, so... yeah, just know that I'm trying hard to pronounce them right. So Fred K. Brataka said that this was the only episode that gave them nightmares. I couldn't sleep all night thinking roaches were coming. Did this episode freak you out? In the sense that, did you really hate bugs? Did this episode creep you out as much as it creeped out Fred?
Not really. The only thing that... Because I think cause it's a very more of a comedic episode anyway. The only thing that really kind of... irked me was the sequence with the cutting of the arm and everything, but it didn't really scare me. I think mainly because of it's the same reason I could actually watch the Scream films, in that it's more predominantly humorous than horror. So yeah, it didn't really scare me that much. I mean,
well, Adam and Adam Silver and Marlena Stemmer also said that they dreamed of cockroaches after watching it. I mean, I can see how you might... I don't think it scared me when I watched it when I was younger, but I can see how you might dream of cockroaches afterwards, or at least feel a little bit itchy when you stopped watching, because it's that idea of something, an infestation, I think, particularly something small and creepy crawly, like crawling around, which is, I mean, the X-Files exploit our disgust and our fear of things, and so this is definitely a case where they're doing that. Cortland Waters Bartley said she loved this episode, and she always laughs when she watches it, no matter how many times she sees it. She says she loves the phone conversations between Mulder and Scully, and she really loves the scene when Scully is in the gas station trying to calm down the panicked townsfolk. She says that she thinks this episode is a really nice, humorous demonstration of how Mulder and Scully communicate with each other, or don't communicate, as the case may be, and how they're connected to each other, even when they're doing their own things. So she said that all in all, this is one of her favourite episodes. So you're in good company, Cortland, because this is also one of our favourite episodes.
Yeah.
So Adam Silver says he thinks this is the most funny Darren Morgan episode. I mean, how would you rate this compared to other Darren Morgan episodes? Is this the one that you think is the best out of all of them?
It's pure... It probably is probably the funniest out of a lot of them. Jose Chung, I think, when I got to it, I think perhaps was a victim of its own hype at times, but still was very, very funny. And very, very funny. Clyde Bruckman, again, funny, but I think it's probably the most dramatic Darren Morgan episode as you can get for a Darren Morgan episode. And Mulder and Scully versus the Weremonster, I think, is the latest episode of the X-Files I actually watched, and that was great. as well, and I can't remember if I'm missing one.
Bethany Good also said this was an episode that she returns to regularly, that she loves the simultaneously philosophical, creepy and hilarious parts of the episode. It is true, actually, that Darren Morgan does actually mix up the philosophical element with the creepy and hilarious, because a lot of what Mulder says in the episode is actually quite sort of philosophical musings. And obviously the hilarious, a lot of that is Scully sort of shutting him down, which I always think is funny. He's kind of sort of going on and on about something, and she shuts him down with her rationality. This seems to have been a very popular episode with our podcast listeners. So, before we go, Matt, where can people find you on the internet?
Well, if you work for Facebook, you probably already know, but you can find me on Twitter with the username xandmatt, as in the letter X and Matt. I have to point out that it's not an X-Files reference, sadly. It's a reference to Xander Harris from Buffy, which is it's probably my equivalent to the majority of the X-Cast fans in that their favourite show was X-Files. My favourite show was actually Buffy, so that's why my username incorporates the character of Xander Harris. So, and I'm probably also on Instagram with the same name as well. So, and I'm mostly active on there.
And you can find me, Clara Cook, on Twitter at ClaraJeanMC. And you can also find our podcast listener group on Facebook. It's called the X-Files Basement. So please come over and say hello and tell us what you thought of this episode and what you think of Darren Morgan. And if you have, you know, any particular fears about cockroaches, if they've caused some sort of philosophical existential crisis in your life, like Mulder. So it's been fun discussing bugs, manure and Darren Morgan in this podcast. But the X-Cast is not over. We'll be back soon. And until then, trust no one.
The X-Cast and X-Files podcast is produced and presented by Tony Black, alongside a dedicated group of podcasters and X-Files fans. You can find us on Twitter at the X-Cast and on Facebook if you type in the X-Cast, or at our group, X-Files Basement, an X-Cast podcast fan group, where you can continue the discussion about all things Mulder and Scully. If you want to support the X-Cast further, you can now subscribe and become a patron of the show on Patreon. On Google, just type patreon.com/TheXCast. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N. You'll see all of our tiers, subscription options and perks, which include early access to episodes, bonus content such as commentaries on X-Files episodes, access to a patron chat zone, and even appearing on one of our patron roundtable discussions. We would appreciate any support you can give the show, so just go to patreon.com/TheXCast to find out more. Our title music is provided courtesy of Will A, who you can find on Twitter at IAmWillAye.